it's wireless, but connected to a wire. You always need a wire.
Welcome, everybody. Today, I'm happy to announce Han Vink as a presenter in the next lecture. I know Han for a very long time already. Actually, when I was a student in Eindhoven, Han was working there. We have been in more or less the same areas for a long period of time. When I was doing my PhD on a particular topic, Han was supervising a student on a similar topic. I was happy to see that at some point you also were doing research in biometrics as the career path that I have chosen. At the moment, he is a senior professor in digital communication at the University of Duisburg-Essen. I just asked him what senior actually means. It means that you don't need to teach anymore. That's a nice nice path.
You want to be a senior too?
Sorry? I can be senior too. I like teaching so far. Anyway, Han, you will be telling us something about biometric systems based on communication principles.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay, Patrick, thank you very much. We indeed know each other since a very long time. He was working in the area of Van Lint, famous mathematician, discrete mathematics, in the coding area. And I was working in electrical engineering, Piet Schalkwijk, also famous in information theory. So we have more or less the same type of interests. If you look at our research background and the results, you will see that there are many things very similar. So I will tell you something about an area for your interest, biometrics, combined with information theory and coding. And I'm working in Germany in the beautiful area of Duisburg. You see, this is a picture of our university, very modern construction. Could be a Norwegian even, right? And we have about, together with Essen, we have about 45,000 students in this area. And Düsseldorf, Duisburg is here, very close to Düsseldorf. And actually, where we come from, Patrick and I studied here in Eindhoven. And I moved here to the border to live there, and actually not far away from his hometown, Sittard, where Patrick was born, I guess. So very close together. What will I talk about? I will talk about Shannon theory a bit, theory on wiretap channels. That's the first part, and then I will continue with a link to other concepts that we have, and especially in the biometrics. And then at the end, I will give you several examples, and then at the end, I will give you some performance evaluations. So that's the topic. So what we started some 20 years ago in biometrics, what interested us was the coding part in biometrics, and you will see that through the whole lecture. So what is the problem if you have a password, you want to enter a computer, you want to enter a system? Very often what you can do is you can make a hash of your password, store it in the computer, in the database, and when you enter the computer system again or the network again here, you give your password, you make a computer hash function of the password, and then you compare them, and then if they are equal, then you can enter the system. Right? So that's very simple and very often used in normal computing systems, networking systems. And what we want to do is we want to replace that with the biometric. So as an example here, I use the fingerprint. Suppose that at an enrollment phase, you go to the database, your computing system, you go to the database, you compute a hash function of your fingerprint, And then at verification, you come again with your fingerprint, your hashit, and then you compare it. But I don't have to say here in this environment that measuring biometrics twice gives you different results. So the second time when you try to enter the system, it will not work. And it will not work because there might be artifacts in the biometrics. Right? So if you then if you calculate the normal hash function of the biometric, then they will differ. So the biometrics, in this sense, cannot be used because with this type of authentication, cannot be used because the hash functions will differ. So you need something like a error-tolerant hash function. The advantage of such a system would be that you don't have to memorize the password. We have today, we need at least 30 passwords. At least in my environment, I need for my daily life 30 passwords. The bank, the telephone, all kinds of things. You buy something, you need a password. You're advised not to use the same password over and over again. So you need a whole list of passwords. That's a big problem. So biometrics would be interesting to use. So comparing the hash database results will not help you. It will not give you a correct answer. So we have to do something. So the first challenge that we had or that we looked at also, and that's I think a very principal problem, is to determine the biometrics that you want to use. For instance, fingerprint, face, or iris. There might be more biometrics that you want to use. But the main problem is that we saw is to translate the biometrics into a binary format. How do you get a nice binary vector out of a biometric? Like in fingerprint, you can use, for instance, the position of minutia or face characterization. You can all kind of systems that do face characterization. And what is a popular method is you use transforms in the iris. But the main problem is to get it into a binary format. And then immediately you create a new problem, because we know that if there is some binary vector, if there's an element missing, for instance, in the fingerprint, what is the effect of that on the binary format that you get? Yeah. So that's a very, very basic problem that we have. And what can you do about that? So the problem that we have now formulating is we get a biometric B, we process the biometric, we get some data, binary, and we put it in the database, and that's what we call the enrollment phase. And later when we come back with a biometric that's not the same as original biometric, we have to determine whether this is a noisy version of the original biometric, yes or no. That's the system that we have to design. So the question is how to do the processing, how to store it in a safe way, because we have to think of the privacy, and how to do the verification. If you have questions, please interrupt me. I'm used to interruptions. So more as a system, I put here the problems in a more systematic way. The top one is the authentication. The bottom one is identification. Two different systems in principle. So the first problem is I mentioned the conversion to binary, because you have to store the biometrics in the database. You have to extract the features. So what are the features that you want to use in this binary vector? The privacy, you want to store your biometric data in a database. That must be done in a safe way. And you have to be able to work with the variations. Yeah, because, for instance, if you want to have a face, there might be a difference in face recognition system from the position of the cameras. They are maybe not the same. Or your fingerprint, maybe you press harder today than you did yesterday. All kind of variations you have to be able to work with, and you have to make your system stable, which, of course, costs something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what you want to achieve, let me put it in this way, you don't want that somebody looks into the database, gets the data, and from the data estimates your biometric, for instance. So you want to, that's what you want. Yeah, I know. The security of the private information, yes. Yes. Yeah, 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 okay. Now, security of the private information, that's the correct term. Okay, good. Thank you very much. So, anyway, so you want to store data about the biometric in the database, and you have to protect that information. So those are the main problems that you have. So what we start with is in the development of the lecture, what we start with is the original work of Shannon. Shannon published 1949, a paper on the communication theory of secrecy systems, considered to be the basic paper on for the cryptography and the security in networks. And he published another one, is a mathematical theory of communication. But these are for information theorists, are the two basic papers that everybody has to study in his courses. And, well, this is a remark I took from the internet that it transformed cryptography from an art into a science. So Shannon considered cryptography in a very basic way and treated that with a lot of mathematics. And his system looks as follows. He has a key, in this case we call the key B. He has a secret, he has an encoder, an encrypted message, an encoded message. He has a decoder, and here is an estimate of the secret S at the receiver side when the receiver knows the key and he knows the secret space. So this is the basic system for cryptography. And he has also in his system an eavesdropper, which means that somebody is listening to the communication. And he defines perfect secrecy. Sounds good for commercials, but he defines perfect secrecy based on the entropy. But in principle, it says that if you want to have a secure system, a perfect secure system, then it means that the eavesdropper doesn't get any information about the secret when he listens to the communication, which he can use the formula entropy of the secret should be less or equal to the entropy of the key. In practice, it means that you have to make the number of messages smaller than the number of keys, or smaller or equal than the number of keys. So the number of messages should not be larger than the number of keys. But he defined it with a probability space, and he talks about entropy. Okay, so this is one of his famous results. And here you see the figure from his paper. I redraw this in this format here. And we can go further. We can even give an implementation, a very simple implementation that we all know. We have a sender with a secret. We have a modulo 2 adder. We have a key at the transmitter side, which we add to the secret. Then at the receiver side, we do again the same. And since we have a modulo 2 operation, B plus B exclusive OR or modulo 2 gives you 0. This means that at the receiver side, we get the original S back, and the eavesdropper has S plus B. So he has to guess the message S from the received information S plus B. So this is just reformulating Shannon's original idea. And if you go to the more modern information theory, I should say, then this is known as the wiretap channel model. So we have a sender which can send to the receiver a secret, and there's a wiretapper which receives a message with a modulo 2 addition of a key, S plus B. Could call it noise, you can call it B. This is the famous wiretap channel from Aaron Weiner. And still people are working on that because it's of importance in the wireless. Okay, so now what happens with the noisy key? Because we were saying that the biometric might have noise in it, and suppose that we look at the noisy key system of Shannon. So what we have is we have a key B, which is corrupted, and we can represent the corruption by adding a noise vector E to the key B, or the biometric B, which gives us B prime. And if you do that, then we pay a price in the number of secrets that we can transmit. And you can do that calculation with entropies. So this is actually the price that you pay for the noisy key. So you have an entropy of the noise sequence. But if you want to do it in a normal language, then the interpretation is that the number of secrets that you can transmit times the number of error sequences that you can have, that must be less than the number of noisy keys that you get. So there's a direct connection with the number of keys, the number of messages, and the number of error sequences that you have. And if that is not the case, then there must be an incorrect deciphering, which means that your system cannot have a perfect security. So for binary symmetric channels, which we very often use, then the entropy is this entropy of the noise is the price that you pay. You have to subtract it from the entropy of the key. So the message is that the actual key length that you have will be reduced due to the noise that you have in your system. That's the loss that we have in the efficiency. Okay, so this is more or less the information theory that we have. And well, we can again take our model. So we have here the key B. We add the noise, and the noisy key is received by the receiver. And at the receiver side, we add this. This was added at the transmitter side. So if we look at the result, we get S plus E, because the B's again cancel. And the wiretapper here receives S plus B. And again, this is a famous model in information theory, which goes back to the wiretap channel of Weiner. So we have now two noise sources. The E is a noise source, and for the wiretapper, the B is also a noise source. So we can translate the original Shannon model with a secret key and with a noisy secret key into the new wiretap channel models of Weiner. And then we can start information theoretical developments. Okay. But can we use this as a practical system? Well, I look at the scheme again, and then we do something strange probably, but the model of Shannon still is there. So we have a bio, B, and we use that as a key. We have a noisy bio, where that's represented by B plus E. B, bio, plus the noise vector. And here, what we do is we send a message, S, which is an encoding, which is a code word from an error-correcting code with a random input. So So the R is a random vector of length K. So that is what we transmit. So we transmit a code word of length N, which is chosen at random from a linear code. And then we add the B to that one, and that is what this we transmit. So we transmit X, we transmit this to the receiver. We add the noisy biometric, and if you go here, you see that the final result will be C of R plus E. So we have we receive now, in principle, at the receiver side, the code word corrupted by the noise that was in the biometric. And, well, what we can do from that is we can decode. If the number of errors is not too large, then we can decode the C of R. And if we go to the database where we store at the authentication C of R plus B, right, then if we know this one, we also know the B. So we can reconstruct the original biometric by using a random code word at the transmitter side. And of course, the message that we store in the database, CR plus B, the attacker that reads the database should not be able to find the B from this one. Yeah? So here we see the problems. We see the problem in coding. How should we protect the message? Yeah? So how should we choose the code? That's one problem. And the other problem here is the E, the error vector in the biometric. And are we able to decode the code word for every error vector? Because normally in algebraic decoding or in decoding for block codes on a normal channel, we assume that the error has a particular behavior, probability distribution or a particular behavior. So we know the channel and we know we can exactly calculate the performance. But the question is that true for biometrics? Can we, if we store the binary vector and we come back with a new biometric that is that has distortion, that has errors in it, if we translate that into a binary vector, are the errors that we get the errors that we expect for normal error correcting code? And I doubt personally that that is the case, but that's worthwhile investigating. So from Shannon, we know that the key or the secret bits that we choose or the secret symbol that should not exceed k, where k is less than the number of secrets that we have minus divided by the number of error sequences that we have. And this actually was more or less the invention of Jules and Wattenberg, two scientists from the US. I think Jules works for RSA and Wattenberg works at the university. And this is what they published in there. And this was a nice result, and it actually this was for us the starting point to work in biometrics, because we want to combine our coding expertise with a new field, and we thought this is a very nice application also for students and for new projects. And it's actually that's what happened also. Yeah, so it's very simple, but actually it was already done by Shannon. Yeah? It's not really new. The only thing that changes if you compare it with Shannon is you define the input here and the rest is the same. And you do your encoding, but well, that was also known by Shannon in his paper, a type of Vernon cipher that we have here. Okay. So, but that's interesting. If you work on a new system, it gives you new problems. Eh? And here, what we can say is very interesting from a practical point of view, but also from a theoretical point of view. If we look at the channel model that we have here, there's an arrow missing here. We add an arrow vector here to the X. We receive X plus E. That was the code random code word plus an arrow vector. At the database, we have X plus B. But if you do an authentication, you can do two things. You have the database, and you have this what you get from the entrance of the person that comes in. So you have actually two parallel channels. It means that the detector can see what the wiretapper sees. So that means you have, in fact, two parallel channels, which means that you can improve your normal detection. In normal communication, like in mobile, you receive your signal, but you don't see what a wiretapper receives. But in biometrics, you can do that because you can read it from the database. So you can use this, and you can use that to increase the secrecy capacity as it's defined by Shannon. That means you can transmit more bits in secrecy than you can do without this one. But there's another thing that you can do. At authentication, if you put your fingerprint, for instance, in a database, at authentication, you know the fingerprint, right? And if you look at this model, the wiretapper gets the original X plus the biometric, and that is stored in the database. So this is the signal that he observes. This is the normal receiver. But at authentication, at encoding, you know what the wiretapper receives. It's a very strange observation, if you communicate, that you already know what the wiretapper will receive. It's not in the normal communications, but here, because you use a database, it's a different principle. And also for this situation, you can calculate the secrecy rate that you can achieve in information theoretical sense. Yeah, so this is something new that came up after we looked at the biometric problem. Okay, so these are the people that worked, say, 10 years ago in this area. Jules and Wattenberg, they call it fuzzy commitment. Jules and Sudan, they call their work fuzzy vault. And then you have also something with the Jules and Sudan modified. Another person, probably you heard of that, is Dodis, Raisin, and Smith. People from computer science, they worked on permutations and equal weight codes used in biometrics. All very basic research, I think. Okay, let's look at a practical system. How does it work? Well, the secret S was the code word. We encoded K symbols into a binary code word. And what the B does, actually, the B changes a number of positions. It's your biometric is transformed into a binary vector. And we have T1s in this binary vector. And that means at T positions, the code word is changed. So the receiver, the wiretap observes C plus B. And at authentication, we get C plus B plus B prime. B plus B prime is the error vector, is C plus the error vector. And the principle is simple. We use, for instance, minimum distance decoding and the minimum distance of the error correcting code. We can define the E. We can find the E, and from the database we have C plus B. So we add the C and we get back the B. So false acceptance rate would then be that somebody produces a biometric that's inside the decoding region. And false rejection means that errors in the biometric bring you outside the decoding region, because then you do not decode the correct code word. You use it to find back the B. This is an incorrect code word. Then your biometric that you estimate will also be the wrong one. Okay. Yeah, sorry. No, it's B plus E. Yeah, as you see here, B prime is B plus E. It was in the previous slide. It's the an error vector added to the normal biometric. Okay, then you can use a performance criteria. You can calculate false rejection rate. You can calculate false acceptance rate, and you can determine a probability of a correct guess of the C, because if there are k symbols, so suppose it's binary, then with probability 2 to the power minus k, a guess would give you the correct answer. But this is classical coding theory, where we assume that errors occur with a certain probability p. You have more than t errors, then this would be too many errors, and this would be the probability that you end up in inside a coding region. Okay, so this is the summary of that. So what we can do is we can increase the k. So we can take more symbols that we choose at random. But then if we take more symbols, then we reduce the minimum distance of the code because we have less redundancy. It decreases the false acceptance rate and it increases the false rejection rate if we make k higher. We can also do a direct guess of the k symbols, which gives you a probability 2 to the power minus k or q to the power minus k. Or we can guess the biometric directly. And what we then would choose is, if we know the probability distribution on the biometrics, then we can choose the best one. So this is the maximum probability of a biometric. Gives you the lowest error probability at the detection. Okay. We can also use the, as an attacker, we can also use the information from the database if it's available. So we have C plus B available from the database. And if we do then the calculation of the a direct guess given the database data, then the probability of a correct guess is upper bounded by 2 to the power n minus k, which is the redundancy, times the maximum probability of a biometric. So you lose, in fact, compared to the direct guess, or you gain, in fact, compared to the direct guess without database, a factor of 2 to the power n minus k. Yes? It's not here. No. The only thing that I consider here is that the attacker knows the data from the database. So he knows the code word plus the biometrics. It added together, yeah, not separate, but added together. It doesn't have some additional information, which in fact there's also a theory that incorporates that. There's a famous wiretap two-channel model, where the attacker knows certain values of the data or that is transmitted, or certain values of the cipher that you get, ciphertext that you get. So there is a model that incorporates that, but that goes beyond this analysis. That's too far away. But it might be an interesting extension to look at that one. We did some work on that, assuming that, suppose you get k bits, I should mention that one. Suppose you get k secret symbols that you encode in the message of length n. Suppose that the wiretapper has half of it. He knows half of it. The other half he doesn't know. What does it bring to him? Or here we have the noisy biometric here, the biometric considered as noise to the code word. Well, suppose that the wiretapper knows certain positions and values of the biometric, which helps him to improve the system. Okay, time. How much time do I have, Patrick? 10 more minutes. Okay. Well, the same system. Well, this is a blue sheet. Can you see it? What's on there? It's at the time that I learned that blue with yellow is better than white and black. But so I didn't change them, because if you change them in PowerPoint, you have everything that's white disappears. So I didn't want to do that. But you can do the same for when you use Reed-Solomon codes. Reed-Solomon codes are not bit-oriented, they are byte-oriented or word-oriented symbols, right? Which might be of an advantage in biometrics, because your biometric vector might be like 8-bit values, the color of the eyes, color of the hair, I don't know, but there might be many 8-bit symbols that characterize a biometric. So you want to have a symbol-oriented code, and that means that Reed-Solomon codes are interesting for this in this aspect. And actually, in Reed-Solomon codes, exactly the same happens as in the Jules Wattenberg. We point at, in this case, we point at a number of positions that are incorrect, and we a number of positions that are correct. So the correct symbols are determined by the biometric in the code word, and the incorrect symbols, you manipulate them. You just take a random choice of the symbols. And then you can do exactly the same. You can calculate performance, when it's correct decoding, when it's incorrect decoding. This is actually the same. And the lesson that we have here actually also is that the performance result that we have is, so the attacker, what he has here is, you can calculate, is the maximum probability of a biometric. That's what you normally would choose without any information. Using the database vector, you pay a price that's proportional to Q to the power, the redundancy that you have in your code for error correction. Again, you lose in privacy and security, protection of your secret information, by a factor exponentially proportional to the redundancy that you offer. So more redundancy, if you have more redundancy, it means that you can correct more errors, but your privacy goes down. So these are two very similar. These are two very similar schemes. Okay. I have to be a bit fast now. Another scheme. What is used is, we are used now to generate a random code word. We have a fingerprint, or biometric, we should say. We add them together. This is what we get. We store it in the database, and we store also next to that one an hash function, depending on the random vector that we choose. Might add some more, but in basically it's the random vector R that we use here. Stored in the database. And the condition that we have now is that, given the database data and the hash function of R, it's hard to estimate B, or the code word C of R. It's actually equivalent. This is the system that we have. So what will happen if we have the biometric with errors? We take from the database, we take the what we have, C plus B, we add together, we get C plus E, we decode, we get R, we take the hash of R, and we can compare the hash of R with the database. And if it's the same, we can say, okay, we accept B prime as a noisy version of B. This is how the Jules-Wattenberg scheme actually is implemented. Well, an attacker, what he wants is, he guesses R or B. That means he can find the B from this one here, from this equation, or he can find the R from this equation. It's equivalent. You cannot use the hash function. That's what we assume. Yeah. Sorry? How can you? This has the error correction code. C is a code word from an error correcting code. So if you go back, see, C plus E, this is the corrupted code word that we get after adding the database data with the data that we receive. So here we have the corrupted biometric. We add that to the database data, and we get the code word plus an error vector. And then we decode. We have R, and from R we can reconstruct the code word, and we can add that to C plus E. We have the E, we have the B, That's done. Yeah? Yeah? Okay. So this is for the attacker. And this is another system that uses another principle. It uses a reduced vector that is stored, also interesting. At enrollment, you have the biometric. What you do is you take an error-correcting code and you calculate the syndrome values of the of that one. So you multiply, you have a vector of length n, and you make out of that a vector of length n minus k, a reduced length vector. And that's what you store in the database, like you do with normal error-correcting codes at decoding. Well, at the entrance verification, I should say, the noisy biometrics goes into the syndrome former. You calculate the product B prime times this parity check matrix. You add that to what you have in the database, and what you get out is an error vector times the parity check matrix, which we know how to handle. We know how error correcting codes work. We can decode the E. We can decode the E. We add that to this one here, the B prime. We get out the B. We can calculate the function of the B, which gives us a key, and that can be used in a system that is following. So this is a way to restore a noisy key into a key without noise. Yes? Yeah. No, no. Short answer. Okay, so you can use it the same in a challenge response system. If you have a chip card, what you have is you have a key. You share a key with the bank, and at enrollment you store your biometric and a code word. This is secret on the card. You come in with your fingerprint or your mobile, it's exactly the same. You add S plus B prime, which gives you the code word. And then you take your key, your encryption, which gives you a key, the encryption of your code word C with the challenge value. And at the server, you can compare it. So this would be a system you can use on your mobile with the biometrics. Another interesting thing that we investigate is DNA as a biometric, with the idea that that this would be important in the future, fast authentication with DNA. And in DNA, what we get is what they call as input, as biometric input, we get a set of what they call alleles. These are properties that have a certain numbering. And what we get for every allele is one or two numbers from a set. For instance, if we have the number TH01, then the numbers that we get out of the DNA analysis would be 6, 7, 8, or 9. Only four numbers we get. And what we do then, you can look at the data that you get from all people. You can look at the probability distribution of these numbers, and then you will see that the probability of 6 is 0.23, 7 is 0.19, this is 0.09, this is 0.49. So what you then can calculate is the probability of, for instance, receiving a 6, because we get only one or two numbers. And if we get 6, it means that we get we have two numbers, but they coincide, so we get probability of 6 and 6, would then be 0.05. We can also have the combination 6, 9, etc., etc. So we can calculate all the outputs. And then if we have that, we can calculate entropy of the DNA data that we get. We can calculate, we can use that in a system, in a biometric system, which we actually did and published. And you can calculate false acceptance, rejection, error rates, etc. It's very interesting. And also why I mentioned this is because in this DNA, there are errors. You think if you get the data from the police, it looks as if the data is without any errors. But there are errors. There are errors like drop-in. You had the value 10, but if you measure it again, then you get the values 10 and 12. You get two numbers. Or you get a drop-out. You get the numbers 10 and 12, and you see only 10. Or you get what they call an allelic shift. 10 and 12 will shift into 10 and 13. So insertions, deletions we have. We come back to Patrick's previous research area. Insertion deletions we also have in DNA. And you will be amazed that the probability of error is 0.05. So if in the news you hear that there's a criminal that has a perfect match with his DNA data, I think you should be careful because there's always an error probability in the DNA profile. It's very interesting to see. And you know why this happens? This happens because the laboratory equipment where they do the measurements is not always the same. So it depends whether you want to have a result in 3 hours, in 5 hours, in 3 weeks, etc. And the companies that do this DNA typing, they don't give away their secrets. It's very commercial activity, actually, if you go back to that one. So what we did is we used all the probabilities of these 28 alleles that we get from the DNA profile. We can calculate entropy. We can calculate the number of bits needed to store the data. And we can calculate the minus log p max, so the maximum probability of the biometric value. And if you do that, then you see that the entropy, the sum entropy of the DNA data that we get is 109.1 bit. So from the DNA profile that we get, we can say as a biometric, we have only 109 bits, which is actually disappointing because we have the idea that DNA gives you an infinite number of bits, but this is only 109. And even the probability of a correct guess is 76 bits, so it's even less than what you measure in the entropy. So this is a very interesting result. We were very happy to get it. So it's not easy to get this data. I can highly recommend you to try to find a company in Norway that gives you this data and where you can use it for authentication purposes. Because then what you can do is you use the data and you can store the DNA of a person in a way, for instance, as we use that in Jules Wattenberg. Okay, so I think my time is over, but I want to mention only one last problem mentioned by Dodis, and that gives you some randomization. We have a biometric, it's very interesting, a biometric, and we convert that into an n vector of weight a, so a ones in a vector of length n. Then we have a code book, and in that code book we have 2 to the power k code words, and they also have weight a, so it's an equal weight code. Yeah, so the number of ones in the code word is A in the code book here and also in the representation of the biometric. And what we do now is if we offer a biometric, we change this biometric into a vector C. Because we have A1s in the biometric, we can have A1s in the code word, so we can transform by a permutation one code word into another code word. And since there are many ways of doing that, actually that's a factorial times n minus a factorial, this is the number of permutations, we choose one permutation at random. And what we store in the database is the permutation, and we store a hash function of the code word plus some additions that we can find. And this is all that we do. So this is application for coding. Here you have an application for equal weight codes. And at detection, it goes the other way around. We have another biometric, which is assumed to be translated into a vector of weight A. We take the permutation from the database, transform this in a vector x, compare it with the code word that's here in the database, find the closest code word, decode the code word, and then we are done. Yeah, and the distance properties, because we do just the permutation, the distance properties do not change. Very nice scheme, but I didn't see any applications for that, so I don't know whether it's practical, but it gives people working in equal weight codes at least a motivation why they do that work. So that's maybe the... in the slides I have an example how it works, but due to time I have to skip this. But again, if you do the calculations, if you do the calculations of for the attacker,